Welcome to Ultimate Sports Parent Radio, where we help parents and coaches instill confidence and ensure success in young athletes.
How do you identify anxiety in young athletes, and what can you do about it? That's what Dr. Corey Bank is here to talk about today. He's a Philadelphia-based professor of psychology and school psychologist whose practice focuses on sports psychology. I'm also here with my brother, mental game expert Dr. Patrick Cohn.
Get our new program, The Ultimate Sports Parent, a 14-day plan for kids' success in sports, by visiting the product section of youthsportspsychology.com. You'll learn how much pressure is too much, what to do when kids underperform, how to react to kids' losses, how to deal with difficult coaches, little playing time, and more. Visit youthsportspsychology.com, and while you're there, pick up our free ebook.
Hi, Corey and Patrick.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Thanks for having us.
Corey, can you tell me just a little bit about yourself? You're a former Division III athlete turned sports psychologist, correct?
That's correct, yep. And I have worked in the field for about 10 years and work with a variety of athletes all the way from as young as 10 years old through the professional ranks and including the weekend warriors as well.
Now, can you start off by telling me how you identify anxiety in young athletes?
Well, my practice is pretty easy because to see a sports psychologist, people have already probably tried a lot of other avenues to deal with it. So usually with young athletes, a parent or a coach will refer the young athlete to come in. And, you know, the first session, I'll ask a few open-ended questions and just spend a lot of time listening and listening to what the young athlete is saying, listening to how they're saying it, and also looking at a lot of nonverbal language, body language, eye contact or lack of eye contact, and how they're emphasizing certain points about their sport and their situation.
Now, so, what's the number one issue that brings kids in, do you think?
I think it varies. It depends where you are and what your practice focuses on. I've been seeing, I'm seeing more high school athletes now who are being recruited for Division I scholarships. And, you know, out here in Pennsylvania, like a lot of parts of the country, the last couple of years has been a recession. And so for a 17-year-old to realize that they might be able to save their parents 80, 90 grand over the course of 4 years if they do well enough in a certain sport, then the sport becomes more of a job and a financial reward versus something that was fun to do. And when they start to have those Division I scouts watching them their junior year, they start to feel that pressure they didn't experience before. And then they don't start to perform as well. They get into the what-if game. What if I don't do well? What if I don't get the scholarship? How I let down my family? How I let down myself? And then that begets more panic and anxiety, and then sometimes they go into a full meltdown. And then usually I see athletes out of desperation. They're in a desperate situation, and that's usually what's bringing them in here. And I would say in the last couple of years, especially with the Division I eligible athletes who might get a scholarship in conjunction with the financial situations that many people and families in this country are facing, that's a pretty popular referral that I will get in my practice. I don't know if it's similar for Patrick or for what you've seen. But
Patrick, what do you see with the Division I?
Well, definitely the pressure to get a scholarship, I think, is a big one. In my work, I'm often preparing athletes for some of the distractions they're going to see when they go from a level where they may be a big fish in that small pond all the way up, you know, to jumping to a college level where all the athletes are just as good as them. And then now they're that small fish in the big pond. And so dealing with that transition and what they're going to see and preparing them for that transition, I think, is another thing that I work on with the athletes. Where do you think, if we tie it into parents, Lisa, if we go back and tie it into parents, Dr. Bank, how can parents identify when they're dealing with a performance anxiety issue, when the athlete feels under pressure and has anxiety? What are the signs that parents can latch onto and say, oh, you know what, my child might be under an unusual amount of stress or performance anxiety?
That's a great question. And most parents at that level are pretty involved with their son or daughter and their sport, and they can read the fluctuations. So first of all, there could be the physical signs, you know, at home, either not being able to fall asleep because they're worrying so much about their sport, or sleeping too much. They just don't feel motivated. They just need to sleep in. You could see changes in appetite, again, if they're nervous. You can see the changes in how they talk about their sport. You know, this is something they love to do, and now, well, I guess I got to go play this game, when before they were passionate about that. That could be another sign. Also, discriminating between how they're doing in their practice and their games. They're performing really well in practice. They're nailing their free throws. They're acing their first serve. And then they play someone in a match or in a game, and they're missing those foul shots they can make, or they're not getting in their first serve, and there's a difference there. And it's not due to a physical illness or something of a medical condition. And then you might say, well, why are they doing so well in practice when there's no pressure? And now when it's a game situation or there's a scholarship that might be on the line, they're not doing as well. And also, I think the reactions to success or failures can also be a telltale sign. You know, if it's just happens to be, you know, they lose a game here and there and they usually shrug it off, that's one thing. Now if they make every loss this big, humongous situation and it affects the rest of their life, then that might be another sign of anxiety. And then are the obvious ones, you know, breathing, you know, stress levels, short bursts of, or not having a lot of patience, a lot of, you know, bursts of anger, a lot of vacillating between wanting to do the sport and not wanting to do the sport. So there are a whole host of signs. And again, if the parents are involved with their kids in sports, they'll probably be able to see some of these signs come out if a young athlete starts to struggle with, you know, an inordinate amount of anxiety and stress.
Now, once they come in, what kind of role do the parents play? Do you think the parents are putting the pressure on, or do the kids take this job onto themselves?
I don't know what Patrick's seen in his practice. I've gotten a lot of athletes that as young as 14 who are burnt out from their sport. They don't want to do it anymore. And the parents bring them in and say, look, my kid's not performing as well, and get them back on track. And I meet with the athletes, even the younger ones, individually first, and then I'll meet with the parents afterwards. And I had a 14-year-old 2 years ago, swimmer, had been swimming since she was four. For 10 years she would swim six times a week between school and club teams, sometimes twice a day. And she had two torn rotator cuffs by the time she was 14. She was swimming, you know, a couple miles a day, 6 days a week, you know, without a break in the season, either school, club, both. And she didn't want to do it. She wanted to see her friend. She wanted to start dating. She wanted to play another sport, not just swim all year long. She wanted to have time to sleep, you know, not get up at 5 in the morning to go to early morning swim practice. And the parents wanted her to keep swimming. And I think it pays to do a case history with the parents to see what their athletic history was and what they fulfilled and what was left unfulfilled. And if they're displacing their frustrations and their dreams that they didn't accomplish onto their kid. And in this case, the mother was a high school swimmer, and she was very good, and you know, she had to go to a school nearby because there weren't scholarships back then, and she had to work to pay herself through school, and she wanted this for her daughter, but the daughter didn't want it. And so sometimes I think it's very important to do a history with a parent or guardian of the child to see what their views on sport and athletics, especially for the youngster, are and what their own history was with it. And maybe Patrick, I would imagine Patrick's seen some similar things to that. It seems, unfortunately, to be a pretty popular topic with the parents wanting more and more and more, and the kid wanting the sport to be part of their life instead of being the entire focus of their life.
Yes, most of the time, 9 out of 10 times, the parent will contact me wanting to improve their child's performance. They're underperforming in some way, whether it's the practice of competition or whether they're underperforming in practice, whatever the situation, and they want their athlete to be more of a consistent performer. That's what I see. But often the parents are part of the problem, so it's hard to separate out, you know, the parent from the child. And from my perspective, you absolutely have to work with the parent on being a good sports parent, but also helping the child along with some of the mental skills that you're working on with the child. So I work with very young kids. It'll be a requirement for me that I work directly with the parents and the child, because they're often part of the issue that, that the kid feels a lot of expectations or feels a lot of pressure, or the parents pushing them too hard. You know, like some of the factors that you talked about, Dr. Bank, certainly come into play. Well, your original question, Lisa, was about the role of parents in bringing them in, or
oh no, in creating the pressure.
Oh, in creating the pressure. Yeah. So, I guess I answered that.
Well, now, Corey, I'm curious. In the case of the swimmer, did you simply suggest to the parents that they let this poor swimmer do what she wanted to do?
I met with the swimmer a couple of times, and you know, because she was still recovering from her second rotator cuff surgery, and the parents trying to, you know, work with her from PT and seeing how fast she can get back in the pool, and the 14-year-old saying, I don't think I want to swim for school. I want to play volleyball with my – her friends were playing volleyball at the time. It was like a school sport. And after the second or third session, the patient was saying the same thing over and over again. And I brought the parent in and I said, look, your daughter swam for you know, close to 9 years competitively. She's had, you know, two shoulder surgeries already, which is pretty uncommon for a 14-year-old. She is in the midst of puberty, and you really don't want to be tinkering around the body a whole lot while she's going through that. Her motivation's not there. She's not performing as well in school, and she's not passionate about swimming. And you know, parents, you know, they come to me. They're paying me money for me to offer my opinion. I said, I'm going to tell you something you might not want to hear. She might not swim competitively ever again because she doesn't want to. Not that she can't go through PT and recover, but she doesn't want to do this. And 10 years from now, when your daughter's 24, do you want to look back and say, I made my kid do something she did not want to do that had detrimental effects on her life? Or do you want swimming to be a part of her life that she still might be doing at 24 for fun and she has a well-rounded life?
Mm-hmm.
And like Patrick said, I mean, sometimes the parents want the best for their kids. At least the ones that I'm seeing, I think that the challenge is that they're biased, and it's hard to stay objective. And one of our roles in this field is to offer a more objective view and saying, look, if I said to you, here is a 14-year-old with two blown rotator cuffs who doesn't want to do the sport, and she's starting to lose interest in school and not do as well, there's starting to be a lot more conflicts at home, what would you recommend to that family? And I sort of give it an open-end question so they can sort of see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the parent will have the child continue to come to therapy and work with me, and sometimes they'll leave and not come back, and sometimes they'll go to another sports psychologist or mental health professional to get the opinion they want to get. But you know, ethically, and I think this is a challenge that the field that we're in, is that we need to do what's right for the client, and even if it means telling the parent something they might not want to hear.
Right.
But at least the health and well-being of that patient, we are laying that out. And some parents will say, wow, you're right. I didn't realize that. I mean, you know, I could be wrecking my kid's life where all I want to do is help them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a stratified sample. You get an array of parents' reactions to this. I think the underlying variable is that they do want what's best for their kid, but how objective can they stay with their kid, which is a challenge, I think, for anyone with children.
Well, now let's say you've got the athlete who wants to make the Division I team and whose parents are pressuring him or her, in addition to the athlete pressuring him or herself. How do you help that athlete?
I ask for a history of what goes on from the moment they wake up or the day they have a competition. How do they feel? What's their nutrition plan? How do they visualize their game or match happening? What's their pregame routine? Do they have a routine? Do they have rituals that they do? Do they have a specific warm-up they do? How does that transgress into the game? How do they feel after the game? And I say, look, we're working together. We're detectives. And so we come up with the potholes that are detrimental to their game. It might be an inadequate warm-up. It might be that they don't get into the flow of the game early enough. It might be they're thinking too much and reacting too little. And then we identify those areas, and then we put in strategies for those areas. And a large part of the literature in this field is more cognitive behavioral psychology, where you're coming up with strategies that affect your thoughts and your behaviors, and you try them out. I recommend trying it out in practice first or in preseason, and then transferring that into your game as you get more familiar with what's going on. So, for example, I had a basketball player who just wasn't very aggressive in the games. In practice, he was great, but he wouldn't shoot the ball as much in the games. He would slack off a little bit. He would think a lot more and react too little. And, you know, basically for the games, he didn't have any warm-up. So I said, look, get to the court 20 minutes early. Get in that mode. Pretend you're playing, you know, guard one of your teammates like you're playing them. You know, get ready so that when tip-off goes off, it feels like you've already played 15 or 20 minutes, and now you're in that reacting mode. You've had that time to transfer those skills over. And he practiced that in practice, and he did that in the warm-ups of his game, and he felt a lot more confident playing. So I think with athletes, we're hitting on four areas in terms of working with them with specific techniques. It's the knowledge of the game. It could be the objectivity of the game. It could be their confidence, which usually comes in with anxiety, or it can be the actual skill sets.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hit those different areas, then it's like offering them another training tool. You know, they have their coach in the game. They might have a nutritional coach. They might have a personal trainer. And here's a sports psychology component. And then those strategies work, and we do feedback on a weekly or biweekly basis or however often they want to come in. And we see what's working. We can, you know, quantify the improvements. Are they getting more baskets a game? Are they getting more of their first serves in? Are they running faster? The nice thing with sports psychology is that you get a lot of quantifiable data.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can see what's working, what's not. And there's a lot of, you know, different books and articles out there. And there are a lot of strategies that we can teach to the athlete that they can internalize and then use in their sports.
Well, Corey, thanks so much for joining us today. This is interesting. I learned a lot.
Yeah, I did too. It was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, okay. Thanks a lot, Corey.
My pleasure.
To listen to the rest of this audio, visit kidssportspsychology.com.